the dance floor, feel your leather. Snap as lightly as a feather. Let yourself go.
What do Let Yourself Go, A White Christmas, A Paper Moon, The Rain in Spain, The House I Live In, and A Fine Romance have in common? Well, they're all written and composed by Jewish songwriters from immigrant families. David Lehman was on the show in November to discuss his book, A Fine Romance, Jewish Songwriters, American Songs, which tells the story of the men and the few women who produced much of the music America would sing and dance to between 1914 and 1965. And we thought that we would re-air that conversation for you on this New Year's Day. I started off by asking David Lehman why, out of the thousands of song titles, he'd chosen A Fine Romance for the title of his book.
A Fine Romance is not only a great song by Jerome Kern and Dorothy Fields from Swing Time, which in my view is the greatest of the Astaire Rogers musicals, but the men and women who wrote the American Songbook were conducting themselves a fine romance with America. They embraced America with a great passion and joy and relief because they were given freedom here that they never enjoyed in Europe.
Now, most of them were men, but Dorothy Fields, who wrote some of the great classics, I Can't Give You Anything But Love, and Sunny Side of the Street, I'm in the Mood for Love, The Way You Look Tonight, Fine Romance. She and maybe Betty Comden.
are the two prominent women. Carolyn Lee, whose real name is Carolyn Rosenthal, she wrote The Best Is Yet to Come, for example, which is on Sinatra's gravestone, by the way. there are a few others. Kay Starr, who was George Gershwin's girlfriend, wrote the music for Can't We Be Friends. Mm-hmm. So there are others, but at the time there were fewer opportunities for women as composers or songwriters.
So let's get right down to it. What musical characteristics specific to American pop music do you see as being contributed by these Jewish children of immigrants? Most of them are children of immigrants, right?
Most of them. Berlin himself was born in Russia and came here. The others were the sons and daughters of the refugees or immigrants. Musically, I believe that the favoring of the minor key, use of altered chords, bent notes, certain characteristics in common with African-American music, with the blues in particular. Gershwin felt that there was the wail of the Jews and there was the wail of the blues, and that they rhyme in several senses. I find that to be so.
Can you give us an example of a song with Jewish qualities?
Certainly. It ain't necessarily so. Baruchu Esad Hashem Hamvorach. It's the same thing. Or the first line in the verse of Swanee, I've been away from you a long time. Hashiveinu Adoshem. They're very similar. Or the very first notes you hear in West Side Story are the sound of the shofar playing tekiah, but flatted as in a blue note. And I don't know how conscious Gershwin was, for example, that he had lifted something from the liturgy, because this could be an unconscious process. But I have a feeling Bernstein was aware of it in West Side Story.
Well, you say songs written during World War II made people dance. And, you know, when I think of the songs written during that time, I think of Fletcher Henderson, Fats Waller, Duke Ellington, Count Basie. You mentioned that there is a certain amount of affinity, but there wasn't a lot of collaboration, was there?
Well, there's a certain amount. For example, Benny Goodman in 1935 had a trio, and the piano player was Teddy Wilson, one of the great black piano players. He's one-third of this terrific trio in 1935 when an integrated musical group was a shocking new development. And this is well in advance of Jackie Robinson breaking the color line in baseball. Billie Holiday sang for Artie Shaw. I think...
And Benny Goodman played Fletcher Henderson arrangements. Oh, for example, Sing,
certainly.
Sing, Sing is Fletcher Henderson's Christopher Columbus.
And that's one of the great swing songs of all time.
You also highlight some very clever rhymes in song lyrics in your book. That you see as having some kind of Jewish connection?
Well, I do. The Jews don't corner the market on wit, but in the Jewish culture, we set store by wit, humor, irony, chutzpah. You find all of these elements in the lyrics of songs. You know, Venus de Milo was noted for her charms, but strictly between us, you're cuter than Venus, and what's more, you got arms. Mm-hmm. That's a Leo Robin lyric for a wonderful song, Love is Just Around the Corner.
Well, you describe Richard Rodgers, you quote Richard Rodgers as describing the melodies to Love for Sale and I Love Paris as distinctly Eastern European. But those are Cole Porter. He wasn't Jewish.
Well, that was a very interesting anecdote I found in Rodgers' autobiography, Musical Stages. When he met Porter, Porter had not yet succeeded on Broadway, although he was about 10 years older than Rodgers. But Porter confided to Rodgers that he thought he had figured out the secret of writing hits. And Rodgers leaned over expectantly, and Porter said, I'm going to write Jewish tunes. Rodgers thought he was pulling his leg. But in fact, in retrospect, Rodgers felt that the most Jewish sounding of all the songs were Porter songs, like Night and Day, Begin the Begin, my Heart Belongs to Daddy. In fact, that line, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, is a very clever line because of the reference to Dada, to Daddy in Baby Talk. But it also sounds a little bit like synagogue davening, to mm-hmm. me, anyway.
I wonder whether Cole Porter was thinking specifically in those terms.
Well, I think Porter's relation to Irving Berlin was like that of Harold Arlen to Gershwin or Rodgers to Kern. That is a mentoring relation. Like Berlin, Porter wrote both music and lyrics. And I think that he patterned his idea of what a composer did after Berlin.
It's interesting that Irving Berlin, who was born Israel Berlin, and George Gershwin, who was born Jacob Gershowitz, altered their names to sound less Jewish, but they didn't come up with names that were totally not Jewish sounding. You know, I mean, George Gershwin could have become George Green or something.
Yes, he could have. George Green is the name of a very good poet in New York, as a matter of fact. The Gershwins changed their name several times, the father did. And they settled on Gershowitz. They settled on Gershwin, but he was Yaakov Gershowitz and became George Gershwin. Harold Arlen was Chaim Arloch.
So they changed their names because they felt that was the only way that they could make it?
I think also was for ease of communication. Eastern European names must have been harder to pronounce. Sometimes these changes of names were accidental and happened at Ellis Island.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that they would have been as well received if people were more aware that they were Jewish?
That's hard to say. Many of them did their best to conceal their Judaism in their songs. It comes out in all sorts of indirect ways. I think they were very eager to embrace America. And Berlin, for example, is a true believer in America. He writes God Bless America, which enters the airwaves on November 11th, 70 years ago tomorrow, on the exact same day that people were reading in their newspapers about Kristallnacht in Europe. And that's not a coincidence, I think.
But they weren't totally secretive about it. For example, no. Al Jolson, who was openly Jewish, and he was perhaps the most popular entertainer in America for a time.
Yes. He, like Berlin and Arlen, was the son of a cantor. And in the first successful talking movie, Al Jolson played the son of a cantor who is faced with this terrible dilemma of either being true to the faith and singing the Yom Kippur Kol Nidre service or succeeding on stage. It's a real parable for the American Jew in the 20th century.
Well, he also appears in blackface, and
yes.
So did Eddie Cantor.
Yes.
And that leads us to another thing, the relationship between Jewish songwriters and Jewish entertainers and African Americans hasn't always been a happy one.
Well, there have been people who have objected to, for example, Porgy and Bess on the grounds that what are Jewish songwriters and librettists doing writing an opera for blacks?
Well, then Miles Davis seemed to think it was all right.
Yes, Miles Davis's great recording of Porgy and Bess with Gil Evans is fantastic. I think in the end, the fact that the music is so magnificent trumps all other considerations. Also, Gershwin insisted on an all-black cast for Porgy and Bess, which gave work to a lot of singers. The fact that the racial stereotypes are perpetrated in Porgy and Bess is another thing that brought some protest. But if you don't allow someone to write a work of art from the point of view of a group other than the group in which he belongs, then you wouldn't have any kind of literature at all except the most self-centered kind.
My guest is David Lehman, whose latest book is A Fine Romance, Jewish Songwriters, American Songs. It is published by Schocken. Well, there were also, not only were Al Jolson and Eddie Cantor and others working in blackface, they were also singing songs that had that sounded like they were, at least in theory, written by black people, like Mammy, like Sonny Boy. You mentioned, what was the other one that you mentioned? Swanee.
After You've Gone would be another song. That was written by Henry Creamer, wrote the lyrics for that. That was written by two black men. I think I favor the idea that there's a real kinship between the two groups, musically and as expressed in jazz and in the classic American popular songs. You know, Fred Astaire appears in blackface in Swing Time. But it's very hard to look at that now in a critical spirit rather than in the spirit of an homage to Bojangles of Harlem.
Harold Arlen was really very, very involved with black music and wrote Stormy Weather.
Well, Stormy Weather is magnificent. Ethel Waters, who sang Stormy Weather, as did Lena Horne, Ethel Waters said Harold Arlen was the Negroest white man she had ever met. It was a very interesting line. Arlen was a very melancholic man. And the most extraordinary thing about him to me is that the man who wrote I Got a Right to Sing the Blues and Blues in the Night and Stormy Weather managed somehow to write songs of such pure joy as I've Got the World on a String and the Munchkin songs and Ding Dong, the Witch is Dead.
Do you think that to some degree this is about outsiders trying to find a place in America?
Yes, I do. And I think that the extraordinary thing is that these people who were definitively outsiders had the opportunity to write nothing less than the words and music of the American dream. Richard Rodgers and Oscar Hammerstein had never set foot in Oklahoma when they wrote this musical play, Oklahoma, that is a kind of vision of union, the union of Curly and Laurie, the two characters, the union of the United States to which Oklahoma is going to gain entrance in the early years of the 20th century when the play is set. It's a vision of a kind of community that can accommodate the outsider. And that opened on March 31, 1943, in the height of World War II, and it was a great expression of American optimism. It was one of those events that helped fight the war on an ideological front.
They did write those kinds of songs. They wrote You'll Never Walk Alone.
Yes, that's
it. Some people find that a little too much, but still another song of optimism.
Yes. Well, you know, in 2006, when Germany lost the World Cup to Italy in a German stadium, at the end of the game, on the loudspeakers was played You'll Never Walk Alone. And I thought that was extraordinary that in Germany they were playing the songs of these two Jewish boys from Colombia. So who would have predicted that?
Well, Rodgers and Hammerstein, Irving Berlin, George Gershwin, Leonard Bernstein, all well-known, Harold Arlen. But are there others we should know about?
Oh, you bet. Everyone knows the song As Time Goes By, but not everyone knows that it was written words and music by Herman Hupfeld, nicknamed Dodo. The great songs in Gentlemen Prefer Blondes, like Diamonds Are a Girl's Best Friend, were written by Julie Stein, a great composer, also wrote Gypsy, and the lyrics by Leo Robin, one of the cleverest lyricists. Gus Kahn was a great lyricist. He wrote the lyrics for Love Me or Leave Me, Making Whoopee, It Had to Be You. There are really so many. Arthur Schwartz is a great...
And his son works here at
Jonathan. That's right. And his partner, Howard Dietz, is an incredibly clever lyricist. These guys are so terrific that one pleasure in writing A Fine Romance is just an homage to these extraordinarily talented men and women and their major contribution to American culture.
In the case of Dorothy Fields, she comes out of show business family.
Yes, her father was a comedian in Weber and Fields, and they had this slapstick routine. Their most famous line is, "Who was that lady I saw you with last night? That was no lady, that was my wife." And in fact, when Dorothy Fields had her first gig at the Cotton Club in Harlem with songwriter Jimmy McHugh, her father hit the roof. He said, "The what club in Harlem?" And before she could explain, he started shouting at her and said, "That's no field for a lady songwriting." And she said, "I'm no lady. I'm your daughter."
And so that's why she wrote Big Spender.
Songs hey, like Big that. Spender. Yes, that's a great song. That was one of her last songs.
If my friends could see me now. She really, she like Irving Berlin, spanned the course of the Great American Songbook, they adapted.
Dorothy Fields was on for about 40 years. Berlin for more than that, actually. About
he lived to 100.
He lived to, yes. The sad thing about Irving and Harold Arlen is that those guys lived past the era of rock and roll, so they felt that they were put out of business.
Well, it's interesting that in the early years of rock and roll, which put them out of business to some degree, although they continue to write hits into that period, we have some of the more famous songwriters being Carole King, Neil Sedaka, Phil Spector, Lieber and Stoller.
Well, and some of them did great work. Carole King, Neil Sedaka, they're really interesting. It's a different phenomenon what they were doing. But
they were writing songs?
Yes. And also some of
And often for black performers in it. Carole King writes Natural Woman with her husband Jerry Goffin and with Jerry Wexler.
Which repeats that pattern. Also, a lot of rock and roll groups in the early 60s took songs from Jerome Kern or Rodgers and Hart. There are rock and roll versions of Smoke Gets in Your Eyes, of Blue Moon, I Wished on Every Little Star. And it proves that that music, these classic popular songs, can be done in any tempo, any time signature, and any style.
Do you think that they are totally American?
I feel that they are American with a great vengeance, but that doesn't prevent their work from being loved and admired everywhere else. I spent several years at Cambridge, England, where there's tremendous appetite for Rodgers and Hart and Arlen, and particularly the witty and sophisticated Cole Porter.
Now, the reason I ask is because there is musical theater in England, and yet I think that when you hear the songs that come out of that, you can spot them right away as not being part of the Great American Songbook.
I agree. But I do think Gilbert and Sullivan had a major influence on such lyricists as Larry Hart and Ira Gershwin and Yip Harburg. They do derive a lot from them. And they derive and some of the composers derive a lot from the Viennese operetta tradition. But they make something entirely new, I think, and American. And that has a lot to do with immigrant culture, with the vibrant cultural life in New York City, with the idea that you had upward mobility in a sense you never had in Europe, and also with the possibility of collaborating consciously or unconsciously with African American.
How much of this is about assimilation? And do you think that that perhaps is one of the reasons that we're not seeing this kind of influence anymore? Because Jews now are assimilated into America and in a way that they weren't in the first part of the 20th century.
Well, I think that's a very good point. A Fine Romance by Dorothy Fields is a sarcastic love song, a fine romance with no kisses, with no insults and no quarrels and all morals. There's an element of romance that's unrequited, and there's a hidden cost to the romance, and one of them is that you may submerge your religious identity in the great wash of American secular culture.
Of course, Dorothy Fields also wrote, "I Can't Give You Anything But Love," and "On the Sunny Side of the Street." These are "I'm in the Mood for Love." Those are all very
those are
positive
wonderful songs.
Well,
they're very 30s songs. Those are real Depression songs. "On the Sunny Side of the Street" is one of those terrific songs that helped people get through the 1930s.
And she collaborated with Jimmy McHugh, who's Irish.
Yes, well, and that was a great collaboration. They were at the Cotton Club before Harold Arlen and Ted Kohler.
The book, A Fine Romance, Jewish Songwriters American Songs. It's published by Schocken in partnership with Next Book. And I want to thank you so much for being with us. It's been a lot of fun talking about this and remembering some of the great songs of my own life.
Well, it's been a pleasure to be here, and time has flown by way too fast.
And here's one of the great songs.
A fine romance with no kisses. A fine romance, my friend. This is, we should be like a couple of hot tomatoes. But you're as cold as yesterday's mashed potatoes. A fine romance, you won't nestle. A fine romance, you won't wrestle. I've never mussed the crease in your blue serge pants. I never had the chance. This is a fine romance. A fine romance, my good fellow, you take romance, I'll take jello. You're calmer than the seals in the Arctic Ocean. At least they flap their fins to express emotion. A fine romance with no quarrels, with no insults, and all